Good morning, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today we will conclude our series of year-ahead conversations and focus in specifically on both the information technology and communication services sectors. A lot has occurred within these spaces over the past year, and there are many trends that will continue on into the year ahead. So a lot of exciting topics to talk about on today's podcast. Joining us on the line today, pleased to welcome back Kevin Dineen, Information Technology and Communication Services Analyst for the Americas, as well as Reed Gilligan, Equity Associate Analyst for the Americas, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So Kevin and Reed, good morning to you. Welcome back, and thank you for joining us on actually what will be the final Top of the Morning podcast for 2020. Looking forward to the conversation.
Great, Dan. Thanks for having us. And it's hard to believe we're already at the end of 2020, isn't it?
It certainly is. And I know we have a lot to look forward to in the year ahead. We're hearing a lot about exciting vaccine developments, distribution plans, and that should make for a better environment as we head into 2021. So a lot to look forward to. We have a lot of ground that we want to cover between two spaces, communication services, as well as information technology. Both of these areas have received a lot of attention over the past year. So there's a lot of great content we want to dig into today. Though, Kevin, to start things off, could you provide us with your thoughts on the communication services sector as a whole before we dive into some industry trends?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. So our equity strategy team takes a neutral view on the communication services sector. It's been a good performer this year. There's certainly been some industry groups and some stocks that have been, you know, stellar performers. But as we look at it, we see sort of a mix of secular growth opportunities that are, to some extent, in total, weighed down by some legacy exposures. And we'll talk about that more in a little bit. In terms of valuation, you know, we think the valuation on the sector is about fair. It's trading about in line with the S&P 500. Maybe it's a little bit cheap relative to its growth, but that probably reflects some regulatory headwinds that we can discuss later. The way that we think about the sector from a fundamental perspective is we really think that there's three pillars or three main drivers underneath the communication services sectors: advertising, content, and connectivity. And again, within each of those, you know, we think that as you pick apart the sector, you see a clear mix of some secular growth opportunities, but you also have to be cognizant that there are some legacy exposures that were challenged going into the pandemic and are probably even more so as we emerge from the pandemic. While at the same time, some of the secular growth drivers, some of those secular trends, they were strong coming into the pandemic, and in some ways we think the pandemic can only reinforce them and actually strengthen those trends.
Well, Kevin, thank you for providing that overview to get the conversation started. So let's dive a bit deeper now into the communication services space. Reed, how has the global pandemic affected the content pillar? And do you expect that these trends will persist as we head into 2021?
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, so I'll talk about three major trends that I'm seeing in the content pillar. So first is cord cutting, and then the cord cutting has been a pretty steady trend over the past 5 years where people are tired of an expensive cable package and are simply just cutting the cord and finding their entertainment through over-the-top services and virtual competitors. So this past quarter, we saw that trend stabilize. A lot less people cut the cord. Now, we see three major reasons why this occurred. First is a super strong news cycle. The U.S. election that occurred is probably one of the most contested elections of our lifetimes, and that just caused a lot more people to be reliant on the news. Second is the reemergence of sports all at once, with the NFL coming back and the NBA playoffs, and we expected that to be a big driver of people to stop cutting the cord. And now finally, as I said before, a major reason why people cut the cord is these cheaper virtual offerings, such as YouTube TV or Hulu TV. These prices have actually increased over the past few years to be almost equal with that of a normal cable package. So with the increasing price of competition, we expect that there's less incentive to cut the cord. But we don't expect this trend to continue into 2021 with the election now over. and cable companies announcing price hikes, we do expect cord cutting to pick back up. Now, the second content trend I want to talk about is streaming. Now, streaming was clearly a beneficiary during the stay-at-home environment. I know I signed up for a number of new streaming services just to consume as much content as I can because I was staying home all the time, couldn't do much on the weekend. So I was introduced to a lot of new shows and podcasts, and I just loved it. But we do have some concerns that this trend may be hindered going forward in the first half of 2021. First off, we expect the COVID pandemic pulled in a lot of subs that people may have not signed up for this service until the future, but because they were staying at home all the time, they signed up. Now, second, production, filming production has been shut down globally, and we're now just getting ramped back up. This could create an air pocket of content in the first half of 2021, just as the difficult comparisons to last year are coming due. So we expect some weakness to be seen in the streaming area. And now finally, video gaming. Video gaming experienced an incredible boon during this stay-at-home environment, and it's become a major form of entertainment. We do expect demand for video games to remain elevated in 2021 with the next-generation consoles launching recently and an exciting slate of upcoming games. And just that the number of global video game players has increased so dramatically because they were introduced to it during this stay-at-home environment.
Well, Reed, thank you for walking us through those trends, a couple of which will indeed continue to track as we make our way into next year. Maybe as a follow-up, curious about connectivity. So, Reed, could you touch on the high-speed internet space? And then, Kevin, could you provide some thoughts on the wireless market?
Yeah, so within connectivity, we saw a increase in demand for the high-speed internet or broadband, with both new customers and upgrades to higher speeds. And when you think about it, it makes sense. A lot more people are working from their homes. A lot more children are in a virtual learning environment. So we saw a lot more devices being connected to internet in households, and we saw demand for speeds increase. We do expect broadband strength to continue into 2021, based on the ongoing remote work environment, virtual learning. And we don't think a lot of people that increase speeds will then all of a sudden try to cut their bill and decrease speeds, because broadband and high-speed internet is just one of those things where once you get used to a certain speed, it's very difficult to go back to a slower internet feel.
Storing wireless is really down to two things. It's down to 5G. As 5G networks ramp, and it's down to the promotional activity driven by the release of the new iPhone, the iPhone 12. So I think that the overall competitive environment, though, remains pretty benign. We're not seeing price wars in wireless, but instead we're seeing promotional skirmishes. And what I mean by that is rather than carriers trying to compete on plan pricing, what they're really doing is subsidizing phones to either entice their existing users to stay or to try to steal share from other carriers. And it's important to think about that in terms of stealing share, because the U.S. wireless market is largely saturated. It's down to a very low state of growth. So to grow, it's hard to grow sort of organically or to ride the tide of increasing subs, because subs aren't really increasing that much. So it's really focused on gaining share by taking other people's customers. And we're not seeing that in terms of plan pricing. We're seeing it in terms of promotions. We're bullish on 5G. We've been long-term bulls on 5G, but we've always been clear that we didn't think 5G was a real catalyst event for the smartphone part of the market. It helps. It's certainly a positive, but we don't think it really changes the sort of tone of that market, nor do we think it really changes the tone of the wireless market, because the reality is consumers are aware of 5G, and they have to be because there's so much advertising around it. But 5G has a pretty limited impact on most subscribers' mobile devices, their mobile lives. Longer term, we're actually much more excited in non-smartphone applications, things like fixed wireless access, where wireless carriers can sell broadband connectivity to the home in competition with the cable companies using a 5G network, and the Internet of Things, this idea that we're going to connect a whole bunch of things that are out there in the world, and that connectivity fabric will be 5G. That's going to enable, you know, new huge sources of data that can be put to work in the Internet of Things and artificial intelligence and a lot of other applications. And that's, I think, a big opportunity, but it's not a driver in the near term. So to bottom line it, we think the wireless, the competitive environment in wireless is pretty benign. 5G certainly helps, but we don't think it's a real catalyst. We think that we're not seeing price wars. We're seeing promotional skirmishes. And that's a pretty good environment because that those promotional skirmishes, those are choices. That's not an industry structure issue. That is a carrier making a decision in any one quarter or two quarters where they see an opportunity to try to grab some subscribers. But most importantly, it doesn't necessarily sort of damage or impair the overall profitability of the industry like the price wars did of a few years ago. So we're relatively constructive on the wireless environment.
Kevin, what about, as a follow-up, the wireless side of connectivity? What exactly is happening in the wireless market, just given all of the buzz around the new iPhone?
Yeah, so I think what we're seeing is again, it's this notion of promotional skirmishes. We're seeing a lot of advertising. We're seeing carriers that are focused on customer retention. You know, it used to be that if you were a U.S. subscriber and you wanted to get a really great deal on a new phone, you had to change carriers. The customer acquisition strategy was always focused on that subsidy. And I think carriers have switched from purely focusing on customer acquisition to also focusing on customer retention. And that those dollars that are available for promotions now are being spread across both pieces of the pie, the customer acquisition side and the customer retention side. And I think that makes a lot of sense because, you know, ultimately, if you're trying to grow your customer base, it's one thing to get people in the door. You can do that through promotions. So, new subscribers coming in the door. But you can also solve for growth by making sure that you keep your existing base, that retention angle. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing now. And I think that is a reason to believe that the environment is pretty benign. There is clearly a focus on 5G. But it's more marketing than it is substance at this point. And to be clear, you know, this is the fourth generation of wireless that I've seen rolled out. It's always been more about the marketing for the first year or two. The substance will come. We just don't think it's in 2021.
To branch off of that a bit further in terms of the marketing advertising industry, Kevin, how has that fared during the COVID-19 pandemic? And are there any longer lasting impacts that our listeners and clients should be aware of?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Dan, because digital advertising surprisingly did really see a downturn in the second quarter. It was surprising to us. It was surprising, I think, to many industry observers. And what we saw was, you know, just certain advertising verticals like travel and leisure and restaurants to some extent, but the worst impacted parts of the economy from COVID, their advertising all but went to zero. But the interesting thing is that engagement, our interaction with the large social media platforms, our online activity, that remains really robust. And those two things combined to create really strong supply growth. Our interaction with these platforms, the time that we spend on all these social media sites, we're creating inventory. We're creating engagement. Our engagement creates that inventory. It's time that the platforms can then turn around and sell to advertisers. And what we saw was that supply created its own demand. And I think that's a really important lesson to be learned from this. Digital advertising was a really unique industry in that supply created its own demand. So what did we see? We saw a sharp downturn in the second quarter. But the third quarter, you saw advertising growth accelerate quarter over quarter, 15 percentage points or so. It was a real snapback, and that snapback wasn't driven by these damaged, impaired advertising verticals coming back. It was driven by new advertisers entering the market. So, you know, I think that there was this cyclical dynamic that we saw, but the secular impact was actually sort of, I think, the lesson learned. And I think, you know, the takeaway for me is that we were all clearly becoming more digitally engaged into the pandemic. We're even more so now. I think you heard Reed talk about the growth in global gaming and how we should think of gaming as a form of media rather than just a form of entertainment. That's something Reed's talked about a lot in the past. And I think what that ultimately means is we're all going to create a lot more supply of digital advertising, a lot more inventory. That supply creates its own demand, and I think that should make us, you know, structurally bullish on the outlook for digital advertising, even if you just want to look beyond the simple math that digital advertising is only, you know, 55% of global advertising. I think there's this secular shift that we have to appreciate that, you know, does it get to 100%? Maybe it does. I don't know. But it certainly has a lot of room for growth as we all create more inventory, as our digital engagement changes. And I think that what we'll see over time is advertising as a percentage of GDP could actually start to increase. I think that's because of shifting media preferences. I also think it's because with digital, advertisers actually have a clear look at their return on advertising dollar. They can actually, you know, see the effectiveness of that. And I think what we've learned 15 years into digital advertising, 20 years into digital advertising, is that the return on advertising dollar is incredibly efficient. And in a world where you can't go out and physically reach your customers, you're going to have to reach them digitally. And I think that's just another reason to be bullish on digital advertising as we look out and think about the next 5 to 10 years.
To that point, Kevin, I know 5G is one of the chief investment office's next big things that was outlined in the recent year ahead piece, a year of renewal. So it sounds like there's a lot within the communication services space that we'll be tracking on a going forward basis into next year. And as you pointed out, Kevin, for years to come. But Kevin and Reed, thank you for some thoughts and reflections on the communication services space over the past year. Maybe we can now pivot over into the information technology space. I know 2020 yielded a terrific run for the sector. As we're recording this podcast on Thursday, December 17th, on a year-to-date basis, the NASDAQ is up roughly 40-41% on the year. What are your thoughts as we head into 2021, Kevin? Can this momentum continue?
Yeah, it's a great question, Dan. So we're taking a neutral view on the IT sector. You know, clearly it's a sector that proved really resilient, although not completely immune to COVID. Earnings estimates, fundamentals held up much better in the IT sector than a lot of other sectors in the S&P 500. But, you know, there were some headwinds here, and we think there could be some lingering headwinds in terms of fundamentals. Things like IT spending. You know, IT spending looks like it's going to be down 6 or 7% this year. It's going to come back, but maybe, you know, we're going to find out a lot more about the state of IT spending in the next 2 to 3 months as IT budgets get set by corporations. Smartphones, you know, that's an area that's going to see improvement in 2021, but I don't think it's a structural change. I think the improvement in 2021, it's not so much driven by the market getting back to secular growth. It's not so much driven by 5G. It's simply driven that by the fact that 2020 looks like it's going to be such a bad year for smartphones. There's probably some pent-up demand. But looking beyond that sort of bounce back, if I could call it that, we think the market is still at a peak. We think that, you know, the market is saturated globally. It's going to be harder to grow industry units. And we think that average selling prices probably come down, even though we're going to ramp 5G. On semiconductors, we're actually pretty bullish there. You know, we see continued demand in the PC end market. We see the server market, the enterprise IT market, the cloud computing market. We think that either is recovering in 21 or it's continued strength in 21. And then interestingly, you know, we think that demand for semiconductors going into, you know, real world applications like autos, industrials, healthcare equipment, we think that's going to be really robust in 2021. But when we put it all together, you know, we do see this sort of mix of some cyclical recovery, some things to be excited about, but we do see some remaining fundamental risk or some potential headwinds. And then when we think about valuation, you know, valuations here were certainly not in the dot-com era bubble valuation regime. I lived through that, and I can tell you categorically we're nowhere close to that. But we do have to recognize valuations are rich. Valuations are sitting at, you know, relative to the S&P 500, about as high as they've been since the great financial crisis. And I think some of that's deserved, right? The sector held up better than other sectors. It was a safe haven for investors. But I think that many people underestimate just how much an impact the interest rate environment had, specifically the so-called treasury yield curve, right? When we talk about the treasury yield curve, we're talking about the difference between long-term rates and short-term rates. When that number, when that difference is very low, we say it's a flat yield curve. A flat yield curve is typically indicative of investors saying, I don't think growth is going to be very robust. In that environment, what happens? A couple of things. Investors look for security. They look for safety. They look for secular growth. They look for margins with strong businesses with healthy margins and strong cash flows. That sort of herded people into the IT sector. The other thing is valuations. If a flattening yield curve with unchanged growth expectations, which is largely what you saw in the IT sector, it's a recipe for significant PE multiple expansion. Any sort of valuation model that an analyst would look at, if you do those two things, keep growth relatively unchanged and take down the discount rate, you get significantly higher valuations. So I think that's where we've been. I think that, 2020, it was a great year for the technology sector, but we have to recognize it was a very, very narrow market. Only 25% of IT stocks actually outperformed their own index. So we saw a real concentration of performance among, you know, a relatively small handful of technology stocks. So when we look out to 2021, you know, we're thinking, I think like everybody, we don't know what the outlook for the pandemic is, but it certainly feels like progress is being made. I think even the simple fact that we're going to anniversary some of the worst impacts is a positive. We're getting good news on the vaccine. You know, we seem to be getting good news across the globe on the economy. So you put that all together, and it feels to me like we should see in 2021, in the IT sector, we should see sort of a catch-up trade by some of the laggards of 2020 as the economy improves, as the pandemic impact maybe lessens, at least on a year-over-year basis, as we get good news on the vaccine. So, we're neutral. Some residual headwinds. We see some headwinds on valuation, but we still think there's a lot of opportunity in the sector as we look at, you know, laggards. 75% of the names in the index may be having a better environment next year.
Kevin, perhaps that's a good point. I know we're beginning to come to the end of our time together this morning, but as a closing point, given that outlook, given what valuations are today, and with hope, it does seem like there is a brighter future on the horizon as we head into 2021. How should investors think about positioning within the IT space? What kind of guidance can you share with us there?
Yeah, I a couple of things. So first off, I think that one thing that we're really advising clients and advisors to think about is their overall exposure to the technology sector. It's been a great, you know, decade of performance. A lot of that performance actually came, you know, in the last few years. That leaves a lot of client portfolios, a lot of investor portfolios with a significant overweight in technology, meaning they own a lot more of technology stocks than the benchmark. In this case, I'm referring to the S&P 500. So the first thing we would say is you should really take a careful, hard look at your overall technology exposure. The other thing that we think about is you should really take a look at your individual company exposures. Nobody likes to pay taxes, but it may be time to pull some of those names back and to rebalance into some of the sectors that have underperformed, rebalance and get ready for what looks like it could be an improving environment in 2021. Specifically within the IT sector, you know, we think you have to be ready for a broader tape. Just like I said a minute ago, 2020 was a very narrow market, right? Only 25% of stocks outperformed. We think there could be, you know, a real catch-up trade here. So against that thought, we think in your technology exposures, you want to be three things. We think you want to have more mid-cap exposure. again, broadening tape, more cyclical, and more value. And value in technology isn't a strategy that typically works and hasn't worked over a long period of time. But with the economy improving, with a lot of things that we're seeing in valuation, you know, we think if you can find value technology stocks with specific discrete catalyst, self-help, you know, companies that are restructuring, companies that are shedding assets, companies that are maybe buying back a lot of their stock because they're past the worst of it and they're fine-tuning their capital structure, matched by really cheap valuations, matched by a lack of ownership among institutional investors, you know, we think that creates some opportunity. In terms of exposures within the sector, you know, beyond mid-cap, beyond cyclical, beyond value, you know, if we were to look at this through a different lens, you know, we recently took a more constructive view on semiconductors. We think that they're geared to some of the cyclical dynamics that we talked about in the economy. We like a lot of the end markets, you know, things like computing, whether it's PCs or servers, memory, which is, you know, that industry is really restructured over the past decade or so. It's pretty close to being an oligopoly. Pricing and supply seems pretty well managed. Demand seems like it's improving. We think there's opportunities there. And of course, what I said earlier, with the auto and industrial end markets and healthcare end markets, you know, we think there are some opportunities for semiconductors to really put up solid growth next year. And again, we would point you towards more of those mid-cap names, those cyclical names, and even some value names within semiconductors.
Well, Kevin and Reed, this was a very productive conversation this morning. So thank you for joining us on the Top of the Morning podcast to provide some thoughts, reflections, takeaways on what was a very eventful year for both the communication services and information technology sectors. And to your points, a lot to look out for, not only in 2021, but as we progress further through this decade with respect to some notable trends. So looking forward to having many follow-up conversations with you both in the year ahead. But in the meantime, hope you have a safe and healthy holiday season. Thank you again for joining us today.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan.
And again, today we have been joined by Kevin Dineen, Information Technology and Communication Services Analyst for the Americas, as well as Reed Gilligan, Equity Associate Analyst for the Americas, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Again, I do want to point out that the publication in part that we've been referencing this morning, U.S. Equities 2021 Equity Sector Outlook, is now available for you up on UBS Online Services, though for our clients of UBS, simply reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of that publication directly. Top of the Morning will be taking a holiday hiatus and will return on Monday, January 4th. From all of us here at UBS, we wish you and yours a happy, healthy, and safe holiday season, and we will look forward to continuing the conversation with you in 2021.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.